of mine throwing a leg over the ball just quite.
Oh, he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Ballcast, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Quick roll call, Brenton Speed.
Brenton Van Speed today.
Brenton Van Speed. Andy Harper.
Present from the Vert Ball family.
Right, Murray. Yeah, I'm getting the Dutch jokes. All right, Murray Shaw present on the show. By the way, just so that everyone knows, Brenton Speed has turned up in an Ajax shirt. We'll get onto that very shortly. On the show, the joy of six. The final series awaits in the Hyundai A-League. We'll preview the two big elimination finals this weekend. We'll look back on Anzac Day, which I know Speedy and Harps enjoyed and was an enormous success for the Brisbane Roar. Plus, once again, Harps is perched next to the sight screen and ready to come off the long run on a couple of his pet peeves. So all that and more to look forward to over the next 40 minutes or so. Speedy, how are you, apart from the fact you're wearing an Ajax shirt?
Well, it's just superb to see my team Ajax get the chocolates in London this morning.
How many teams do you have?
I travelled across town, Sydney town, in 1995 to buy this shirt. How well is it holding up?
What, the shirt or you?
Well, both.
Right, okay.
I mean, I'm still fitting into it. I mean, don't you pay some credit?
Is that a shirt or a doona?
So, 1995, you get an Ajax shirt?
1995.
You get a fine one in Sydney?
How old are you in 1995?
I'm first year uni.
I remember you in first year uni.
Yeah. So,
Lithe, I'd say.
And I'd fallen in love with this team just playing majestic football. It was Finidi George, the Nigerian, Patrick Clive at the young teenage striker, the De Boer brothers. Mm. Danny Blind in the heart of defence.
Edwin van der Sar
in goal. Edgar Davids, Clarence Seedorf. Unbelievable, the 11 they had.
Yep.
It wasn't a dud player.
Yep.
Mark Overmars.
Yep.
Just played brilliant football and they won the Champions League, upset Juventus in a final with van der Sar keeping a clean sheet. And they were my team. And they remain my team, and it's great to see.
So what's Liverpool?
Knock off Spurs. Liverpool, they're Premier League team.
Oh, right. Have you got a team
in Barcelona are my Spanish team.
You've got a team in the Ghanaian Premier League as well?
I've got you surrounded, mate.
Got a team in the Sierra Leone competition as well?
Are you one of these football types?
Sao Tome and Principe.
You can't have two teams.
You can have as many teams as you like. You can have many teams as you like.
Yeah. I love the Ajax team.
Yeah, but what do you do, Speedy, if Ajax and Liverpool play off in the final? Serious question.
Well, then I get the half-half shirt, half. And just wind everyone up a bit more.
This is most unlike you, Speedy, not to take one side definitively.
No, I would be all over Liverpool.
Brenton Van Sanchez or something. Speedes.
And this current team have just played Tottenham off the park and it takes...
For half an hour.
But then they turned Tottenham into a championship team that just lumped it forward for the big man and played off Llorente flick-ons.
Looked like that was the only chance we were going to have of scoring, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you got to credit the tactics of Maurizio Pochettino to be able to see that and go, we're going long to the big man.
Yeah,
well, get stuck in, Fernando.
He did have to change his tactics. I know you're not a Pochettino fan.
No, I was just saying. But
he did have to change his tactics, of course, after the first 30 minutes because they were getting so horribly outplayed.
Well, he stumbled.
And he was forced. He was forced into it.
Yep. Stumbled into changing his tactics when Jan Vertonghen went down.
Yeah. Speaking of Jan Vertonghen, Harps, do you want to come off the long run straight away?
Well, in a sec. But let's keep talking the football for the time being because the Ajax team that first won Speedy's heart won the Champions League before the massive, massive wealth revolution from Russian, Chinese, or Russian, Asian and Arab money went through Europe. And Ajax don't have, certainly as we watch now, they don't have a team of the same names. I know Clivert was only young and was yet to make his career, etc. We'll look back on this Ajax team and see where these players go. But the point is, we need to seriously now keep our eye on Erik ten Hag, the coach of Ajax, because this is the first time a club of this tier since Mourinho in Porto won the Champions League. Obviously, they're not there yet, Ajax, but the clock's certainly ticking on some serious attention to this Dutch coach because the goalposts have changed markedly, as we've all talked about in the last even 6 to 7 years with the amount of wealth washing through the top end of town. And for him to have done what he's done to this point against those odds is truly remarkable. Don't you agree?
Couldn't agree more.
And I believe he managed Tommy Orr at FC Utrecht I've heard Tommy wax lyrical about him before. Marz, you want to clarify that, do you?
No. I was also thinking he might have managed Luke Wilkshire before too, so I'd have to double check that as well.
Yeah, but Tommy Orr, I've heard him like talk about this guy before very briefly, but maybe it's something someone needs to get expansive with. I'm talking to you, Carly Adno, foxsports.com.au.
Should we listen?
Pick up the phone to Tommy Orr, have a little yarn about this manager from Ajax, and you might get a very good yarn out of it.
Right, we'll get to Vertonghen later on in the show. Let's quickly start where we always start, Speedy, with your Brazalis.
Oh, the Brazalis. I was just enjoying talking about Ajax. Just a Hakim Ziyech, or Ziyech. It was part of the reason that Andy Harper was going for Morocco to do some wonderful things at last year's World Cup. Didn't quite work out for them. They were so close to pulling off some massive results there. I think he's better than Coutinho, for instance, Hakim Ziyech, and I could see him being a Barcelona player. And they're actually picking up Frankie de Jong. He's going from Ajax to Barcelona next season. They've got that connection with Cruyff of yesteryear, of course, and a lot of Ajax players wind up at Barcelona, so de Jong there. But don't snooze on Hakim Ziyech, who provided the assist for Van de Beek today. He got frustrated because he's not on the same page as Tadic. So you've got two of the front three who don't get along. He blew up at Tadic today when he didn't play him in for what should have been a 2-0 lead. Just keep an eye on that in the second leg. He's an absolute gun. Righto. I mentioned this last week in the Brazalis.
Righto.
And it's quite...
get ready for this. You're all about to cop it.
It's quite astonishing that after I mentioned Fergie time becoming Sean Evans time, that he goes again at Suncorp Stadium. He puts up 3 minutes of stoppage time. At 4 minutes and 10 seconds into stoppage time, Brisbane score. Nick D'Agostino. So that's a minute 10 overtime, and then he lets the ball go back to halfway and they kick it about for 30 seconds. So I think it went over 5 minutes, the stoppage time, when it was slated for a 3 minutes minimum. Is that perplexing?
He's entitled to do that. It's only an indication in injury time.
But no other time was accruing. Like, there was no other stoppages in the 3 minutes.
So. Play on.
Play on.
Play on.
I'm giving you minus one.
It's minus. Yeah. It's minus. That's controversial, Speed, because normally you want to see more football. And if a goal comes as a result of more football, normally you're doing cartwheels as best you can.
No, I want to see the right amount of football played. Yeah. So the right amount was 3 minutes well played. 3 minutes deserve to be added on. But suddenly you're finding a fourth and fifth minute of stoppage time.
People are getting an extra bang for their buck.
Not sure where it comes from.
They've paid their hard-earned to turn
Speedy. If we're going to do that consistently, sure. But it's so out of the box. So he gets a little clip, minus one. Paul Tierney, Man City v Burnley, English Premier League. You know, you got the big games at the end of the season. There's a lot of referees bottling it. And they've done it right since Man City v Liverpool became a thing about a couple of months ago. Martin Atkinson started the ball rolling, absolutely choking his guts up, vomiting all over himself, Martin Atkinson, by not giving pens. So Paul Tierney the other day sees Ashley Barnes. He has a clear, unobstructed view.
Handball.
As
yep.
Barnes handballs. It could not be anything else but a handball. Stopping a shot going for the bottom corner, and he turns a blind eye.
VAR next season, probably a handball.
Absolutely a handball. How did he miss it?
Because
he vomited all over himself. Minus three. Antonio Mathieu was the referee this morning.
It's not positive, the Brazalis this week, Speedy.
He is known as an eccentric, a bit loopy. He was the referee in charge when Man City played Monaco and they had that 5-3 game. He makes things happen.
You're telling me this, I wouldn't know.
Antonio Mathieu had a very good game this morning. And I haven't seen him have that many good games, so I'm going to give him 3 votes. Well done. Hope that gets through to Antonio.
Righto. Players you enjoyed watching over the last 7 days, stay with you, Speedy. Lockie Wales.
Yeah, he played for Melbourne City the other night and they won 5-0 at home. And the last three goals, he featured in all three of them. There was the no-look assist for Shaun Harrison to score. He whipped one across the face that allowed Dario Vidicic just to tap one home in between goalkeeper and defender. It was a beautiful ball in. And then he had the back heel that led to the wonderful team goal at the back end of things as well. So 3 assists playing in the Florent Barangay role. And I think...
You're on fire with your pronunciation.
I think he excelled in the Florent Barangay role.
It's because you're in your Ajax shirt.
And I would have Lockie Wales ahead of Florent Barangay in a wide area for Melbourne City come finals time. But he won't get in. He'll sit there on the bench. Fair enough. Aussie player will be overlooked for the French import who has flattered to deceive and will forever be thankful that he took on Daniel Leck out of position as a makeshift right-back for the Brisbane Roar to light up his season.
We'll talk about City a little bit later on. What about you, Harps? Nikolai Topor-Stanley was the player you enjoyed?
Yes, he has. He just keeps on keeping on. Topor-Stanley is way off the top mark for consecutive full games in the A-League. That is Alex Wilkinson, who shows no signs of weakening at all. But still, I think Topor-Stanley's number two, and he is, put it this way, he's not showing any signs of letting up. I think in the depressing season that Newcastle's has been, Topor-Stanley's been outstanding. His game on the weekend was outstanding against a very good Sydney team, and the Jets can build next year again around Topor-Stanley as a rusted-on full-season centre-back. You know, the point is needs to be made about Topor-Stanley, about Alex Wilkinson, about these guys who earn their money, right? They do the work, they're available for selection, and they play full games every week. It's a club's dream. And what's one of the keys to Wilkinson and Topor-Stanley, and I'll focus on Topor-Stanley particularly, they don't get yellow cards. They don't miss games with suspension because they play with discipline. They respect the game they're playing. They do it as cleanly and fairly as they can. And Topor-Stanley, on that basis, has shown great maturity this year. He has had, as most youngsters do through various times in their career, got a little bit hot-headed, but he has matured magnificently. Physically, he's as good as ever. His game awareness is showing no signs of slackening off, and the discipline to go with it means the coach can rely on him, and that's what you need at professional level. 3 points for Topor-Stanley. Massive performance. Well done. More to come.
The player I enjoyed watching over the last 7 days is a 17-year-old out of the Hutt International Boys' School. In fact, he still goes to the Hutt International Boys' School. His name is Ben Wayne, and he played up front for the Wellington Phoenix on Sunday night up against Perth Glory, given his opportunity because Mark Rudin decided to rest Roy Krishna for the game and a few of his other stars. Andrew Durante was on 7 yellow cards, so that one was sort of forced. But Ben Wayne went, given the opportunity, as is so often the case with young players, stood up to it. He came up against Dino Djulbic, who was playing professional football when Ben Wayne was born, and you could see that Dino was like, welcome to the big time, son. I'm going to show you what this A-League's all about. And if it was a points decision between Djulbic and Ben Wayne, I'd give the points to Ben Wayne. I thought he was a fantastic opportunity for him, and he took it with both hands. So congratulations to Ben Wayne. Staying on the A-League, let's wrap up last weekend quickly, because I know the two of you, and it seems so long ago, were at Suncorp Stadium on Anzac Day and both enjoyed the occasion immensely, Speedy.
Yeah, terrific day. Brisbane, through David Poure, saw this early opportunity to put it on the calendar. So he grabbed the potential of, you know, having a decent crowd at Suncorp to watch Anzac Day football there in the Queensland capital. And interestingly, on the morning of the day, the front page of the Courier-Mail was Mal Meninga saying we need an Anzac Day game in Brisbane. So can the Roar keep hold of this fixture after doing a very good job of it first up? Obviously, the main reason we're playing sport on that day is to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice, and everyone did that wonderfully well across the weekend as well. But yeah, it was a terrific day out, and we saw an absolute goal fest.
Thoroughly enjoyed the hour lead up to the game, Harps, as I'm sure you do. You did as well, hearing from the likes of Gary Wilkins, Luke De Vere's grandfather. It really put the spotlight on football's involvement in this great day.
Yeah, it was a great commemoration. Great bit of scheduling from Brisbane and David Poure. Massive congratulations. And on Speedy's point about the NRL now wanting or maybe agitating for that, well, can we just encourage as an A-League fan base that David Poure defends that decision and goes forward with a Brisbane Roar Anzac Day game and defends it and prosecutes that case.
I'm fairly sure, Harps, he's already got Suncorp booked for next year. So good. I don't think there's any rugby league going to happen there next year.
We need to back him to defend that vigorously. It was great work. Now, the 2 o'clock kickoff for me, a masterstroke, and that should be set in concrete. I think, just on the Anzac thing generally, Can we please, as a game, keep Anzac Day to Anzac Day? Can we please, this is just my view, I don't know if people agree, but can we please resist what the AFL-type manipulation of the culture to create Anzac Eve, for Pete's sake? We play a game and commemorate on the day, and then we move on. That even includes having Anzac ceremonies 2 days after Anzac Day. I understand and respect the intent, but can we just keep Anzac Day to Anzac Day? That's my view. And the third thing I'll say on this is that Brisbane have to schedule this game against Wellington Phoenix. It's too obvious not to happen. We've got a Kiwi team in the league and they're at least a 50% part of Anzac Day, and so Wellington should feature in that scheduling.
Just quickly, so next year, Harps, I take your point, but next year Anzac Day is on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So generally there's a doubleheader on the Saturday, a game at 5:30, a game at 7:30, right?
Yep.
Let's assume that Brisbane want to maintain tradition, have a game at 2 o'clock, so we're going to have three games on Anzac Day. Why don't we just put Wellington as one of the other two?
Well, so long as. I don't mind, but what I'm thinking, my point is Brisbane have moved on this before anyone else, and so Brisbane should get the pick. And I think the pick of the scheduling would be Brisbane versus the Kiwi team. That's my only point, because the years after, when Anzac Day does fall midweek and we don't have these Saturday night doubleheaders, then what do we do? And I'd rather just lock it in. I love building traditions around
I don't agree with you, actually.
Hang on, Harps. Let's put it to the Wanderers, just see what they want to do on Anzac Day next year. And but we've decided we're not going with your plan. We're going with whatever the Wanderers want to do on that day and the way they want to work
out. Leave the Wanderers alone. I was at the Wanderers medal last night. They're a great club, well run.
No, Harps is making a very good point, and it requires foresight to look ahead down the years. He's saying Brisbane, they've the first to do it when it hasn't fallen on a weekend. There were two previous Anzac Day games ever when it fell on a weekend. So Brisbane have gone for the Thursday Anzac Day game, and that should be the fixture forevermore now against the Kiwi team, Wellington, into the years, into the future. So next year when it falls on a Saturday, Brisbane, Wellington are the starting point. They are the first fixture, and for every year after that, they are the only fixture if it doesn't fall on a weekend. And then you have two other games that happen to be on Anzac Day next year. Harps makes a good point. We need some foresight. We need some people to look ahead.
I just don't think they should be playing Wellington every year. I think that's, if it's a commercial decision that they're trying to get some fans from some other teams to travel to Suncorp on Anzac Day because it's a public holiday and they figure that more fans are going to travel from a team within Australia than outside Australia, then they're entitled to not go with Wellington. And I know the reasons why they went with Adelaide, because Melbourne is fixated on AFL on Anzac Day and New South Wales is fixated on rugby league on Anzac Day. So they went with Adelaide, who didn't have anything to be fixated on, if you like. Of course, they're going to watch Collingwood versus Essendon. They're an AFL state, but they don't have a team involved on Anzac Day, which is the point I'm trying to make. And so they've been tied in with Brisbane Roar for a A-League game on Anzac Day, and I think it makes perfect sense.
So
I don't mind Wellington being involved, but I don't see why that Wellington can't have a fixture as well, and we'll have two games.
Yeah, we're giving up on Wellington being winning any metrics in the years to come. They're just going to be sitting there in the doldrums.
And surely, if this
but
not...
But they're allowed to make a commercial decision, but...
Of course, must. Of course, we respect the fact that Brisbane thought about this. They just didn't pull this one out of their backside. Obviously, they went through the issues. We're just making a suggestion.
Yeah, it's a romantic suggestion. I'm just giving you the reality of
that.
It.
I get that. But the other point about Adelaide is that Adelaide have Remembrance Round. They've put a stake in the ground about Remembrance Round, right?
Yep.
Having a big Remembrance Day game. Great. Then I would have thought that doesn't discount them necessarily from Anzac Day, but you know that sort of part of it has been they've already contributed. And my point, the other point about Wellington, who are serially difficult for Australian clubs to get big crowds on Wellington home matches, right? When they host Wellington, does Anzac Day not give you the very best point of leverage you're going to get in the entire season to have a Wellington fan base turn up?
And the flip side of that is Wellington are entitled to try and get some big home crowds themselves, and what better way for them to get a big home crowd and make some money to the club than having an Anzac Day fixture themselves?
Have they articulated any sort of desire or plan for that?
No, they haven't.
Right.
No, they haven't. But I'm just giving you the point, like the other side of the coin.
So two fixtures in the years to come.
I think
Wellington
so.
Home game, Brisbane home game.
Yeah. I think so.
There we go. We've actually workshopped this. We haven't just shut things off like the Wanderers have done to many conversations.
Mm.
And we've actually workshopped it. And Murray Shaw, you've come up with a very good point.
Mm.
Why not have two fixtures on Anzac Day for the years?
Well, as
it,
I said...
It is a good point, Mars. But then what do you do with that second fixture if it runs into the Rugby League and the Aussie Rules, which are television behemoths?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree there. Don't forget, of course, the time difference probably would help, given that you play at 7:30, for example, over in Wellington, comes in at 5:30.
Can I just pick Andy Harper up on the pronunciation of that previous
word? Yeah, he said behemoth. You go with behemoth?
Behemoth.
You go with behemoth?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
What'd you go with, Harps?
Sorry, Den Speed.
Yeah.
What'd you go with?
Well, I don't know what I said.
Behemoth.
I said
Beamoff. Beamoff. Interesting.
All right.
Andy,
can we move on?
No, one more.
Okay.
Andy, you were alongside...
Are you taking over?
Right. You were alongside Gary Wilkins in that pre-game chat. What a wonderful chat that was.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Underutilised media talent, the big man.
Yes. You know, Speedy, that would be a situation repeated 1,000 times around our game. This is the point we quoted, and well, Benny Coonan did just a brilliant job with Ian Sison, the historian... that feature we put on and...
Yep, telling the story of Il Rimple, yep.
Yes, that's right, and Ian's book, The Game That Never Happened, which is just a line about the fact that, of course, soccer's happened in Australia, but no one's ever spoken about it. And what we saw from Gary Wilkins is a complete example of that. These great stories with great people who can spin a yarn, they've just been ignored. We've focused on so many other things in our game, and it's about time... We unleashed the beast in soccer football and excited people to go and find these stories, tell them, and then get people to listen to them. Couldn't agree with you more. Now, Gary was fantastic. And what a group of players he represented for us today on the Anzac Day coverage, that 67 Vietnam tour with Johnny Warren, Johnny Watkins, Manfred Schaefer, blah, blah, blah. What, talk about golden generations of football people who contribute to this country. Incredible.
Absolutely. If we want the game to go forward, we've also got to recognise where it's been. And we certainly did that. The other talking point, I guess, out of the weekend, Central Coast Mariners went down 5-0 to Melbourne City on the Friday night, just at the time when Coach Alan Stadjic is, of course, trying to organise a contract for next season and beyond. Has he done enough over his tenure so far, Speedy, to justify getting a gig for next season?
I think the stat on the night was that how many games has he had in charge? Maybe 10?
Yeah.
Eight to ten. And he doubled the points total that his predecessor had managed. So that's pretty good going with the same cattle, I would have thought. And now he gets a whole off-season to find his own cattle or some of his own cattle, those that are off contract, he can think about replacing and bringing in some young talent. And maybe, you know, Danny De Silva was loaned out from the Mariners to Sydney FC. Have a look at that Melbourne City team the other night, work out who's not going to be playing next season too much and go into the A-League loan system and bring some of the young talent that's been stockpiled at Melbourne City and maybe even the Wanderers and bring them into A-League football quicker than they can play rather than playing NPL 2, for instance. So Alan Stadjic is a pretty wily operator and I think he's done some pretty good things so far with the Mariners, very close to getting some other results as well. They got belted the other night by Melbourne City 5-0, but what was there to play for the Mariners? Probably a lot of them also knew they were...
Well, hasn't been much for them to play for about since he took over.
Yeah, and they got some wins.
Mm. Harps?
Yeah, I agree with some of the things Speedy said. I've got some questions on others. I agree Alan Stadjic's got a... He's a good coach. He's a wily customer. There's some things I don't understand about this, however. I haven't been as impressed. Yes, there's been an improvement... since the change, what do you put that down to? And there's a whole heap of factors.
And what are you measuring it against?
And what are you measuring it against, exactly? And the questions that remain unanswered for me is that what was Alan actually... How was he trying to prove himself in this interim period? Was he trying to use a lot of the same players that were evidently part of Mike Mulvey's problem and say, see, I'm a better coach because I can get more results with bad players? Oh, not bad players, but, you know, players who haven't worked here. And was this all part of a prearranged plan? I forever will remain confused as to why the club didn't take this last 6, 7, 8 games, whatever it was, to give their next batch of promising youngsters 6, 7, 8 games of invaluable A-League experience. I don't understand what Alan Stadjic and the Central Coast Mariners got from continuing to play Jonathan Asprow, particularly Matthew Miller, who next year is going to be suiting up for what's supposed to be your arch rival. Every moment he played was developing him as a Jet, not as a Mariner. And I don't understand this. I don't know what Stajic was trying to achieve. And I remain confused. I still believe he's a wily customer, as you say, Speedy. I still believe he's a very good coach, as you say, Speedy. But I remain mystified by this finish to the season for the Mariners, which collapsed badly. It was embarrassing on the weekend.
So you're sacking him, or...?
Well, I'm not in a position to say that because I don't know what his plan was as he articulated it to his employers. And I don't know what his employers said to him. And this is the point, you know, when we're outside throwing this stuff around, we don't know what their agreement was. We don't know what targets he had to hit, and we don't know what the rules of engagement were. And unless you know that, it's not fair to say. I can only express the queries that I have and put them against what I believe to be true about Alan Stajic, and that is a very wily and smart coach. But there was something for me that did not add up in these last rounds of the season.
Finals football starts on Friday night. Melbourne Victory up against Wellington. Two sides you'd probably say aren't at the peak of their powers at the moment. Although Victory have had 15 wins for the season, which equals their record for the most number of wins in a season. It's their second best ever season for goals scored, but they haven't scored more than two goals in the last 10 rounds. So their season has sort of stuttered at the back end. But what we do know about Melbourne Victory is they can get up for the big games, as we saw last season, and their team isn't a lot different to the one that won last year. Victory versus Wellington. Let's start with you, Speedy. Was Mark Rudin right to rest his stars last weekend ahead of this game, or coming off a 5-0 loss, is that detrimental to his side's chances?
Irrelevant. Irrelevant, as Mark Rudin would say, and he did say in the post-match press conference. He had to play on the Sunday, and... You know, they're taking on a pretty strong Perth team. So there's every chance, even if he plays his best team, they still lose 2-0, yep. 3-1. So their fixture that then presents itself is the Melbourne Victory on a Friday night when you've got to get home or get to Melbourne, get to the East Coast and acclimatise for that game. So I think he saw Melbourne Victory as the most likely option for him, given what Melbourne City did on the Friday night. That flung the whole goal difference around because we're all thinking Melbourne derby on this Friday night, but it's not to be. And he's also got the record this season of three draws against the Victory for Wellington, and they've taken the lead in each and every one of those games. There was a 3-3 at Amy Park. They led 3-1 and only coughed up an 88th-minute equaliser from Costa Barbarousis, I think it was. There was a 1-1 draw at Amy Park, and there was a 1-1 draw at Eden Park in Auckland in that rare game there. So, and he was asked about it in the post-match. You got a pretty good record against the Victory. And he goes, yeah, I know that. And he had a big smile on his face. So Mark Rudin fancies the Victory in a one-off game in a final, even if it is on the road. So I think he played for that and he's got it.
Wellington have lost three of their last four and four of their last five outside New Zealand. Do you give them a big hope on Friday night, Hubs?
Not a big hope, but definitely a hope, because Victory haven't been that convincing. But I don't know. Of course, if it works for Mark Rudin, he's a genius. But to go to Perth and just concede that with a couple of changes, you're at least a two-goal worse team than them, what gives you any comfort you can go to Melbourne and do the same against the defending champions but hold them?
I guess the performance against them in the three games this season. Yeah.
With a home final for which to play? Are you kidding? You go to Perth and you don't back yourself, even with a couple of changes. Because this is the...
They didn't have a home final.
All they had to do was avoid
Adelaide
Victory.
Was always going to have the home final, don't forget.
Yeah, they're either in Adelaide or they're in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're either in Adelaide on Sunday or they're in Melbourne
on
Friday.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm suitably chastened and I've just whacked myself.
Don't make that mistake again, otherwise you'll be booted off this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think what it does show, actually, now I will change tack, but I was going to make this point otherwise, perhaps a little bit of a lack of depth, and that might be a problem for Wellington as they go on. I'll make this point because, you know, Victory... In that Champions League match, I know we're sort of comparing apples and oranges here, but Guangzhou Evergrande, big team, big players, hammered Victory the week before, still needed to win the match for the Champions League. Victory threw out the kids, and the kids did great. Wellington go to Perth, and Rudin makes a couple of changes, and they didn't fare nearly so well. So the losses in the run-in are not irrelevant. It does, even if it's a slow leak, it does, your confidence and belief does start to depart, even in little bits. And, you know, finals is where you got to call all the big guns together. And it's on that point that I think actually they do have maybe a slight advantage or an opportunity against victory, because some of their big guys, and I'm talking particularly Keisuke Honda, who I think has been a fantastic acquisition for the most part this year, but I don't think his Champions League has been great, and I think some of that has slightly seeped into his A-League form, and that's a window of opportunity for Wellington.
Yeah, Wellington were not playing a Perth Glory from seasons past that had nothing to play for in round 27. I mean, they've been crowned premiers. They knew they had a fortnight off before they're going to host a final to win a grand final, and Tony Popovich ran out a full-strength 11 pretty much, barring Shane Lowry with yellow card dramas and what have you. So, you know, Mark Rudan, I think he took the odds to it and said, we're highly unlikely to get a result here and force the final in Adelaide. So he saved his squad to have them cherry ripe, the likes of Krishna, the likes of Durante, ready for that fixture at Amy Park. And he fancies that matchup. And you've got to credit his management, perhaps.
Well, if it works, but they lost 5-0 for Pete's sake. You know, it's not, they didn't lose 1-0, 2-0 or 3-1. They got hammered 5-0.
By the Harlem Globetrotters in the A-League at the moment.
It could have been a lot more than 5-0 too.
Melbourne Victory's kids played against a champion of Asia.
Yeah. Have we lost him?
No, you haven't.
Oh, right. Sorry, the dramatic pause was so long, I thought you'd dropped.
But it was an exclamation point for effect.
Yes, right.
A previous champion of Asia, yeah.
Sure.
And got lucky with Anderson Talisca wasting a chance that Diego Castro would not.
Hang on, Speedy. Hang on. Luck comes, goes. Fight, what Wellington got... We played really well, but you're telling me Wellington played really well, but they unluckily got hit 5 times on the break?
No, I'm saying they ran into a very good team.
38 shots Perth had.
Like, yeah, wow.
Andy Keogh was, 5 goals behind the golden boot at the start of the night.
Fancied himself.
And he seriously should have scored 5.
Yep, so Roy Krishna gets the golden boot, and he's the player that the Victory have to stop in this final. What a game to look forward to on the Friday night, a team that has taken it to the Victory all season.
We're on air from 7 p.m. You're behind the microphone, Speedy, with Robbie. On the sideline, we've got Tara, we've got Adam, we've got Archie Thompson, we've got John Cosmina, and we've got Glenn Moss joining us, given that he's played for both those sides.
National anthems for the finals?
I don't know. Is that relevant at the moment?
I love the Kiwi anthem.
No, I don't think you get national anthems for the finals.
Just the grand final.
Sunday, Adelaide versus Melbourne City. I am starting to think that Adelaide might be on a little bit of a roll and could be a little dark horse for the title. They have won, I think it's 4 of their last 5, and the other one was a draw. So over the last 5 rounds, I think they've got the best form of any team in the competition. I guess the big question for Melbourne City, Andy Harper, is what sort of team is Warren Joyce going to play this weekend? Does he put the kids out again?
Nah, you kidding? Conservative.
Mm.
He'll go back to the bread and butter, which is what he knows and what they've built. That's fair enough. That's his call. And they're going to be very difficult to beat on that basis, as they are most weeks. But I think you can forget the razzle-dazzle and the vibrance of youth. I tip slightly towards Adelaide. I think their end-of-season form has been capped off by their long search for someone to start scoring goals, and in the closing stages of the season, they've started banging in goals. So,
here's my point too, Harps. Right, the final series is a cup competition. Would we agree with that?
Yeah.
Knockout cup competition. Yeah. Who won the only cup competition this year?
Adelaide United.
But who won the one the previous one?
Sydney FC.
And the one before that?
Melbourne City. I saw where you were going.
I was getting there.
You got your years out of whack again. That's 2 strikes.
There,
that's 2 strikes for you on this podcast so far.
Well, Kurtz is a great coach.
I just wonder whether his timing is run perfectly.
Well, could be. But I think we're stretching it a little bit to think that...
I've just had a perplexed look from Brenton Van Speed in here.
So against Melbourne City with Bart Schenkerfeld rejuvenated.
There aren't going to be many goals in this one, but Craig Goodwin's probably in as good a form now as he was at the start
of
the season.
Is Bubba Diawara going to lead the line?
Well, who knows? He's be refreshed.
Will Craig Goodwin get away with a high boot in a final?
And the other,
well, Andy Harper's little rant the other day has ensured that he cannot get away with anything resembling
on.
A high boot.
Hang on, if this is the elimination final of the rants, surely Speed, George Blackwood is primed for a hat trick after spending that fruitful time in the Ollie Roos camp.
Yeah, that's true. One player I wanted to discuss for Adelaide. Everyone picks their teams of the season at this time of the year, and I heard the boys on Monday on the flagship podcast going through theirs. Isaias is consistently Adelaide's best player, but never sort of really gets talked about as one of the greats of the competition. But he's had another great season, and he's guiding them around.
Teams or not?
He made Brucey Gitte's team, I noticed.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly, because Bruce has played with him and probably knows how invaluable he is.
But you would have, if you're having a little vote now, you've only got one role, Kilkenny or Isaias.
Well, if you've got two defensive midfielders and you're out of Kilkenny, Isaias and Brandon O'Neill, a lot of them went Kilkenny and Brandon O'Neill.
And I would as well.
I think Isaias' season, as is his career in the A-League, has been highly underrated.
So who's he knocking out?
This is a bloke, by the way, Isaias. I thought you might have joined me on this, Speedy, who you talked up to go become a Socceroo about 12 months ago.
Yeah, and I talk up Kilkenny should be in there as well.
I don't disagree with that.
I would talk Brandon O'Neill right now.
I would have Kilkenny and Isaias. Yeah.
And O'Neill doesn't get in.
No, not for my team of the season.
Wow, I think he deserves to be in the Socceroos. I think he's playing as well as anyone.
Well, that's fine. What's that got to do with the team of the season?
Mm. Well, I think you guys are in violent agreement that they're three very good players that have had great seasons.
Yes.
You're right. I think if you're going to tip towards Isaias, it has to be because he's done an incredible job without the same calibre of player around him.
More my point. Put him in a different side and I think we'd be raving about him.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe in a different side, Muzz, he doesn't access that leadership
that he's had
to for Adelaide.
Big fish, little pond, yep.
Yeah, so he's been outstanding. Who do you drop those, Speedy? Great question, because they're three fantastic players.
Who you got, Harps?
I go with Kilkenny.
And?
He's my number one.
Then?
We all agree on that.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't know. I haven't given enough thought. Just based on what I've said on the theory of relativities.
What's that got to do with it? What's Einstein's theory of relativity got to do with it?
No, I didn't say Einstein.
Oh,
I said a general theory.
Right.
I go with Isaias, I guess, because he hasn't had the same. He's done more with less. Put it that way.
Andy Harper disrespects Brandon O'Neill. I can see the headline.
doesn't get invited to the Sydney Annual Season Awards.
You're doing the classic thing now. You're building Isaias up to be an international for Australia, his adopted country, and then you're taking the big axe to his knees and hacking him down.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what the media
because
does.
I'm going to elevate the Irishman, Brandon O'Neill, instead.
Tabloid speed. Just build him up to knock him down. We'll get your tips for both those games at the end of this podcast. Just wanted to quickly congratulate, as we move away from the A-League, former Melbourne City W-League coach Joe Montemurro, who, as we know, moved across to coach Arsenal in the Women's Super League in the UK and piloted them on the weekend to their first title in 7 years. 19 games, they scored 69 goals. The star of the show was a Dutch superstar by the name of Vivian Miedema, who scored 39 goals in all competitions, including 22 in the league, and won the PFA Player of the Year title for the Women's Super League, which means it was a Dutch double, of course, Speedy, because your man, Virgil van Dijk, won the men's award. So big congratulations to Joe Montemurro, and one would imagine at some stage down the track, he's probably the first in line for the next Matildas gig, whenever that might be going.
And Ante Milicic, is he going to become the new boss of?
That leads me into that. So if Ante Milicic is, as some are suggesting in the press, going to link with the new South Western Sydney MacArthur team in the A-League, not next season but the season after, that would open up a Matildas role. But would Joe Montemurro leave the Women's Super League in the UK, where I imagine he's probably well looked after, to become the Matildas coach?
Is it called the Super League, is it?
I think it's the WSL, is that right?
I would have thought it's the Premier League, but I don't know. I digress. But I would say Joe Montemurro maybe eyeing off maybe a Lyon or a Bayern Munich or a Wolfsburg as his next sort of progression to get into that. And Spain. Mm. Wow. Barcelona cleaned up Bayern Munich the other day, I think, in the UEFA Women's Champions League.
Yep.
And the Spanish teams were never on the radar. It was always the Germans and
they're
the,
all
the
throwing
French
some
teams.
Money at it now. Yeah. They're all throwing some money at it.
Yeah, so maybe they'll look at Joe Montemurro and say, well, come down to Spain.
Mm. We wait and see. Righto, Harps, we prefaced it at the start of the podcast, but a couple of your pet peeves were present over the past 7 days in Europe. Start with Jan Vertonghen in the Champions League this morning, which we touched on a little bit earlier. He a bad head knock when he ran into a goalkeeper and his fellow defender, Toby Alderweireld, going up for a header in the attacking end. Blood everywhere, claret everywhere, goes off the field, gets cleaned up, goes back on the field, clearly not all that well, gets taken off and could barely stand. And of course now all the talk around concussion and whether he should have been allowed back on the field.
Yeah, well, you know, thankfully, well, hopefully at this point still nothing serious, no serious damage to Vertonghen, because one of the points about concussion is you never know what the lingering effect, even in the short term, is going to be. But I guess it's something like this is going to have to happen, and maybe again, in the big games, for people in football administration to actually take notice of what they're playing with here. This whole part of our game has been serially ignored. The game has not wanted to confront it. Thankfully, head injuries are not as prevalent in our sport as they are in other football games, but that doesn't ameliorate against the need to do something. And so I think what football needs to stare in the mirror very, very earnestly and say, we have to have a very low threshold for dealing with head injuries. That is, as soon as someone's taken a whack to the head, we have a very low threshold of acting on behalf of the player. And some things, I think, should become mandatory. And FIFA need to seriously get some experts around the table and work this out. But firstly, The analysis or the scrutiny of an injured player needs to be by an independent doctor, not someone who's attached to a club and therefore might act in the club's so perceived interest.
Vested interest, yep.
Yep. So it's got to be an independent medical assessment. Secondly, this games should be being watched by this independent medical assessor on television, at the ground. They should have access to the footage. What I mean, why I say that, this is, sometimes with a head knock, it is evident on the head knock that a player has passed out. But by the time the medical assessment has gone in there, not privy to this footage, they've got the player and his to a greater or lesser extent, compass medicine can answer questions, and everyone says, play on, nothing to see here. So there is visual data that can be accessed by a medical assessment, live speed, and that should be taken into consideration. And then what the boffins at FIFA need to do is, in making this an independent assessment, then make for some sort of allowance that a head injury player is removed from the field and maybe can be replaced by a substitute. The reason why we go so carefully in this is because over many decades, unfortunately, we have to say, football culture has developed a really nasty cynicism where people can't be trusted, where, you know, if this isn't managed properly, then there'll be all sorts of accusations that someone faked a head injury to get an extra substitution. What this incident is showing us is two things. Firstly, we have not come to terms with any sufficient management practice for head injuries. And secondly, it's shining a light into one of the very dark cultural aspects of football, and that's the lack of trustworthiness.
That's why Antonio Mathieu got some votes in the Brazales earlier, because he actually assessed it better than the doctor did, and so did his fourth official, another Spaniard. They both looked at Vertonghen and said, he's no good. Mm. And then they actually looked the doctor in the eye and said, you reckon he's good?
Then
Vertonghen himself took himself off because he felt so crook.
Mm.
Well, this shouldn't happen. Yeah. I mean, this shouldn't happen. I mean, we go back to the semi-final we called Speedy, or the quarter-final of the Asian Cup, and UAE defender Fares Juma was cleaned out completely at the end stage of that match against the Socceroos. Clearly, he was knocked into the next millennium. But he went off, had the smelling salts, you know, brave, 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 shouldn't have retaken the field, did. And then what happened? Collapsed and had to be ambulanced away. He shouldn't have retaken the field. He shouldn't have played in the semi-final, but he did. This is how backward football is. I think back to, and we've been on about this at Fox Sports for over a decade, and we've probably been late to the discussion as well. But I think in probably the first season of the Wanderers, there were two injuries in the one game which brought this brought soccer's recalcitrance to the very forefront. Mateo Poliak took a ball to the head in a defensive wall. He was knocked out, clearly. Shouldn't have been allowed to play on, but did. Shinji Ono pulled up a little bit lame and came off with a strained hamstring, but a tired hamstring. And the post-match commentary was, we decided to rest Shinji because we didn't want it to become a six-week injury. Never mind the possibility of long-term and life-changing brain damage to Mateo Poliak.
The second of your pet peeves, Harps, happened in the Leeds versus Aston Villa match, vital match on the weekend.
What was vital about it?
It was almost gone by the time they...
That's why Bielsa said have a free goal.
Yeah, exactly.
It meant nothing that game.
Yeah. Anyway, Speedy.
Just had to pick people up on that.
Can you give it an I digress again?
I digress.
Right. Leeds... Sorry, I'm just trying to get the order right. Leeds score a goal after Villa thought they were going to kick the ball out for an injured player. Have I got that right?
Yeah, everyone stopped.
Everyone stops. I was trying to get the teams right. Yeah. Ball goes in, chaos ensues, and of course, as we know, Leeds coach Marcelo Bielsa allows ball to go up the other end and score, finishes 1-1. It all comes about because of this idea that every time a player goes down injured, we need to kick the ball out so that he can get treatment, Andy Harper.
Yeah, thanks, Belford. Well,
I've just rolled two balls across the six-yard box for you, and you've smashed the first one to the top of the net.
Yeah, I hope I don't miss both of them, although that has happened in the past. Well, you know, this dovetails perfectly off the last point I made, one of the last points I made about head injuries. That is, the culture of the game has become so cynical that you don't know if someone's injured or not now. And what I hate about this is the duplicity of the playing culture, the double standard of the playing culture, whereas it's not sporting to play on if someone's gone down injured, but it is sporting to fake an injury. Are you kidding me? And so, of course, the culture needs to change, and that is the referee stops the game and only the referee stops the game. Now, this might take us a while, and it might never happen, but if there was agreement, it might take a while to get this culture back on track. But the duplicity of players to think that it's not sporting to play on when someone's down, but it is sporting to fake an injury, is an utter disgrace.
This weekend, or coming up over the next 7 days.
Written and spoken by?
It does get written and spoken by Andy Harper on behalf of the Andy Harper
Party. You're just leaving me hanging. What do you guys think about that?
Always leave you hanging. This weekend, Friday, Melbourne.
What do you think about it, Belford?
I agree with you, Harps.
And what about you, Van Speed?
And the other day...
But it's not going to change.
Everyone stopped, and you could say, like, the Aston Villa defenders had all relaxed. The midfielders said, well, you can have the ball because you're going to kick it out. And only one player decided to get it on the wing. Oh, hello. They've all stopped here. I'll score a goal. Mm. And that's why Bielsa saw the writing. And the player got sent off in the fracas afterwards. And Bamford... the Leeds United striker faked a hit to the head, and the red card that subsequently came for his opponent, El Ghazi, has been rescinded, and Bamford's going to cop a 2 or 3 game ban. So maybe football's getting something right on that front.
Well, another little sidelight on that was very active on the Villa bench was our own beloved Milo Jedinak.
Mm.
He was very animated on behalf of his team, etc. But Milo Jedinak, The other side of that coin is Milo Jedinak was playing for the Socceroos when I think Holger Osik was the coach in Saudi Arabia, and he was insisting, Carl Valeri was the player who actually caught the broadside, he was insisting that his team play on and not stop for Saudi players going down injured, leave that to the referee. So Milo, I can't recall exactly if he played in that game, but he was certainly part of that whole thing, has now ridden both horses in this race. There is only one answer. It's for players to clean themselves up, let the ref do them the job, and for players to be honest. Is that too much to ask? Apparently so.
This weekend, Friday, Melbourne Victory versus Wellington. It is worth tuning in before the kickoff just to watch an interview with Keisuke Honda that we've managed to procure. We haven't heard a lot from Honda since he started, so we get his thoughts on a lot of the players he's playing with, his coach, what he thinks of the A-League, etc., etc. Sunday, Adelaide versus Melbourne City. Tuesday, Champions League's back, Ulsan Hyundai versus Sydney FC. Wednesday, Daegu versus Melbourne Victory. Tips and a score. Speedy, Melbourne Victory versus Wellington. Tips and a score.
Melbourne, 3. Wellington, 1.
Harps, tips and score.
Tips and score. Well, I go, well, I can't be the same as the Speed. I mean, we look the same. We can't tip the same, can we?
Well, of course you can. You can do what you want.
I'll go 4-1 victory.
Wow.
4-1 victory.
Well, only because you picked 3-1.
I'll take victory 2-0. Sunday, Adelaide, Melbourne City, tip and score. Brenton Speed.
Adelaide United, 1. Melbourne City, 1. Extra time. 0-0. Penalty shootout. Eugene Galekovic.
Up against his old sides. Up against his old side.
Breaks their hearts. 4-2. Melbourne City.
Harps?
Yeah, that's an enticing prospect. You've almost got me, Speedy. But again, I'll say it's done. I'm going to say it's done in extra time with Adelaide winning.
2-1. I'm going to take Adelaide 1, Melbourne City 0 in the 90 minutes, which would leave then, of course, Melbourne Victory playing Sydney the following week and Adelaide heading across to play Perth for spots in the grand final.
And Adelaide are going to knock off the glory, are they?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did.
I said they're a smoky.
You said you feel like they can go all the way.
I said they're a dark horse to go all the way.
It's like Bozza said,
don't
Melbourne
twist
City
my words.
Can go all the way.
Don't twist my words, Van Speed.
Bozza, Melbourne City can go all the way. Come on, turn it up, you blokes.
Speedy, thanks for your time, Miss Blake.
And Tottenham are going to turn it around with Son Heung-min back in next week.
Don't be surprised if Harry Kane also back in next week.
Are you wearing your Barcelona shirt to work tomorrow?
I will certainly be wearing my Barcelona shirt to work.
Because you were a fan of theirs in 1994 when Risto Stoich got.
Yeah, they're my Spanish team. Yeah,
that's right.
I've still got to work on an MLS team, a team in the New Zealand competition as well.
No. You've got Houston in MLS. When we went through Houston for the Socceroos match, one of the Socceroos matches.
I think that's my baseball team. I don't think I've got an MLS team
yet. We have now. I've given it to you.
Where were you born? Where were you born? Wisconsin?
Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah.
Well,
what's the local team?
Well, don't really.
Milwaukee don't have a team.
Mm.
Minnesota, you could go for. That's close enough.
Chicago?
No, Minnesota's closer.
Yeah. You're trying to get me across the line there, aren't you? Andy Harper, thanks for your time. Enjoy the football on the weekend. That's all we've got time for this week. Daniel Garb, Simon Hill, and another will be back on Monday for the flagship Fox Football podcast. And we'll be back next week. Enjoy knockout football. Bye for now.
Come on, Aya.
Come on, Spurs. Come on, Barcelona. Come on, Houston.
Bye-bye, Minnesota.
Coca tough, eh?